Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by the Brain Injury Law Group, Attorney Gordon Johnson, www.tbilaw.com, 800-992-9447. To get automatic updates, join in tbisn.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He's talking about getting better from the brain injury. Write him on the web at tbilaw.com or call 800-992-9447. Welcome to another edition of Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Brain Injury Radio tonight. I'm really excited about our guest. I've been looking around all of the Facebook pages and online communities lately, and there's one thing that I've noticed a lot of talk about is not only our situations and our symptoms, but the tremendous struggles that people have trying to deal with the system when it comes to Social Security and VA benefits after our injuries. And so I got to thinking and have an acquaintance here that I wanted to share with you guys tonight. Our guest is Melissa Thomas. She's with the Bassett Law Firm. Since 2004, Bassett Law Firm has been dedicated to serving the needs of the disabled nationwide by effectively providing assistance in Social Security and veterans' disability claims and appeals. With over 50 years of combined experience, Bassett's attorneys have conscientiously assisted thousands in the pursuit of SSDI and VA benefits. Bassett Law Firm combines client education, personalized service, and attention to detail in effectively representing the disabled client. Through an intense focus on the claimant's specific situation, Bassett Law Firm's attorneys are able to successfully represent claimants through a favorable Social Security disability decision. The Bassett Law Firm combines claimant education, personalized service, and attention to detail in effectively representing disabled claimants across the country and insulates clients from the frustrations of dealing with the Social Security and Veterans Administrations. Boy, you can say that again. Tonight, Melissa's going to cover the Social Security disability application and appeals process and why filing or appealing a disability claim as soon as possible is to your financial advantage. I'm going to unmute Melissa in just a minute, but I thought I'd give you guys a little bit of what our layout is going to be tonight. I'm going to wait and take calls at the end of the program. I know we all have specific situations, but I want to be able to get the most amount of information out and give Melissa time to give us some of the ground rules and, you know, starting at the beginning with filing these SSDI and VA benefit claims. And then I will take your calls towards the end of the show. So if we can just see if Melissa's on the line with us. Are you with us, Melissa?
Hi, Kim. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to the show tonight. I know there's a lot of people who are really excited about what you have to say and have really struggled with the bureaucratic system. And one of the things that I wanted to mention is that, you know, a lot of us have some problems with sensory overload and memory problems and, you know, emotional shifts from before, you know, we became disabled. And I want to say that a bureaucratic system like the Social Security system can really bring anyone to their knees on a good day, but be particularly challenging for people who have undergone a disability. And there's been some talk in the rooms, you know, whether people should pursue that process on their own or whether they should seek representation. We can guess, since you work for a law firm, what you're going to say. But I was talking to Melissa earlier about something I read on a board, and one of our members was talking about a person that she was dealing with that was charging her $250 and $300 to fill out the paperwork, you know, each one of the applications she needed to submit to Social Security. And I want to start there, and then I'll let Melissa take off with the beginning. But tell me again your answer to that, because I found it very interesting. I had never heard of such a thing, and neither had quite a few of our listeners, and I appreciated your explanation of that today.
Sure. I'm glad to help. First of all, before I speak, I just wanted to let everyone know that I am not myself an attorney, but I do work for attorneys, and that anything I say tonight is good general information, and that's intended but not guaranteed to be correct and current. So don't rely on everything I say tonight, but if you'd like more information, feel free to contact our firm. So nothing I'm about to give tonight is legal advice, but I can give you, based on my 14 years experience in handling Social Security claims, what I believe to be my opinion. So in relation to that, let me let you know that in order to practice Social Security law or handle Social Security disability cases, one does not need to be an attorney. There are non-attorney representatives that help people in applying for Social Security disability, as well as attorney representatives. Now, regarding the $250 charge per form, I must let you know that that is kind of odd to me unless it was approved by Social Security. Social Security's rules state that all non-attorney representatives must have their fee approved by Social Security prior to accepting any fee from any claimant or anyone else. So, and usually this work is not done in piecemeal. For instance, $250 for this form or $100 to file the claim. It's just not done that way because all claims are handled based on a contingency basis. Fees are approved by Social Security, and normally the fees are 25% of the back pay or $6,000, whichever is the lesser. And I can tell you most claims are not awarded and attorneys receive or non-attorneys receive $6,000. I would say the median fee is probably around closer to $2,000 or $2,500. But that being said, that's not paid until the claim is awarded. And also, Social Security usually pays that fee directly from your back pay and pays us directly. But non-attorney representatives, most of them, do not have that eligibility for direct pay by Social Security. Therefore, claimants are often having to pay that representative directly. But the $250 charge, I'm curious about. I have to admit I don't know anything about that or who this may be, and I don't want to comment on that. But their fees must be approved by Social Security prior to actually accepting any fee from a claimant.
Right. And I would suggest if that person is out there that I was talking to, listening to this program, to get in touch with me either on our Facebook page or at my website, inaflash.org, contact author, and drop me a little note because I want to discuss some of that. Some of those details with you. I highly recommend, if you're going to seek representation, that you do use a licensed attorney. And again, those licensed attorneys are going to be working on a contingent basis and not, charging you each step along the way. So Melissa, tell us a little bit. I'm typing in. I want you to know, folks, on the program page is the contact information about how to get a hold of Melissa or the Bassett attorneys. I've also typed it in the chat room. I'll mention it again at the end of the show, but it's Bassett, B-A-S-S-E-T-T, BassettLawyers.com. Their phone number is 1-800-331-1127. So if you watch the chat, the program notes, or contact me, I will be happy to give you the contact information. And in addition, I wanted to tell you that our listeners that what we're going to be discussing tonight, Melissa was kind enough to give me an outline of her talk that actually gives the process from the beginning of how you maneuver through the Social Security disability process. And if you want to drop me an email, I'll see to it that you are emailed a PDF of the information. So you'll not only get to hear this information live now or in the archive of the radio program, but I'll also send it to you via email if you'd like me to. And DJ said, what state are they in? And that leads me, I'm sorry, before I turn you loose, to something else. I always figured that you had to use an attorney in the state that you lived in. Now, you guys are in Columbia, Missouri, but tell us why that's not the case. Your attorney doesn't necessarily have to be down the block from you.
That is correct. Number one, as long as an attorney is licensed in any state, they can practice law within any federal program. So with Veterans Disability Benefits, which we also practice, and Social Security Disability, as long as our attorneys are licensed in at least one state, then they can practice nationwide for Social Security Disability and Veterans Disability. Now, part of our practice in doing so, obviously, we can't be directly down the street or in your town. But the benefit of this is an administrative process. Everything we do can be done over the phone or electronically. So those that are disabled or have a condition that meets Social Security's rules, they only need to sit there in the comfort of their home and give us the information we need in order to proceed with a claim. And that's all the way through to the hearing level. If it needs to go to a hearing, we will fly to you, to your state, to your hearing office, and represent you at the hearing. But we can do that anywhere and everywhere within the United States, including Puerto Rico.
Great. Super. Okay, I just wanted to make sure that was clear, too. And we'll cover that as we go, DJ. Information you need most times, medical records. Okay, I think that's going to be addressed in our talk, DJ, but thanks for the question. So, Melissa, when a person does go through the experience that leaves them with a traumatic brain injury or any other type of disability, what does a person do? I know, you know, that's one of the big confusions is, you know, you're going on about your life, your normal day-to-day routine, and for some of us, out of the blue, something happens that rocks our world, takes us off the front lines for some length of time with complicated recoveries, and then in back of that, we find out that we're no longer able, as much as we would like to be, to step back into the shoes of our old life and carry on the life that we were living before. So that's a pretty lonely, confusing, usually painful place to be. And most of the time, people don't know where to go or how to even get started, because if our listeners are like me, you know, that was never going to apply to me. I was never going to be in that situation. So I was definitely at a loss. Can you tell our listeners, maybe from the beginning, just give us a little information about how you go about maneuvering this bureaucratic jungle?
Sure. First of all, I completely understand this process is daunting and overwhelming and can be time-consuming. And those with a traumatic brain injury, it can be twice, three times worse in order to go through this process. So let me give you a little bit of background about Social Security disability and what happens before I tell you the process. First of all, the rules and requirements for Social Security disability cases, they're really fairly simple. Essentially, to be eligible for either Social Security disability or SSI, which is another program within Social Security, that's really a means-based kind of system, claimants must be financially eligible and medically eligible. Now, for the Social Security Administration, they examine medical issues, that's your illness or your injury that's disabling, as well as any legal and financial issues, that's whether you've earned enough credits to be eligible for Social Security disability or for SSI if you have a low enough income. Regarding the medical issues, a claimant must have a medical condition that is severe and has to be either meets the requirements of a Social Security impairment listing or prevents them from working at any of their past jobs or prevents them from doing any other job as it's known in the national economy given their education and their age and their skills. Now, another important rule is that the disability must have lasted or is expected to last for at least 1 year for Social Security disability insurance to be awarded. On the legal financial side, they are really looking to see if you are working or if you had worked and if it was considered substantial gainful activity. But I'll get into that more in just a little bit. Now, the process. So let's say you would like to file on your own. Social Security accepts applications via their website at ssa.gov, and you can do all of it electronically. And then they will also send you some forms to sign. They'll send you some additional forms to complete. But I can tell you from our experience, this is all we do, all day, every day. So we speak Social Security's language. When we handle an initial claim for a claimant that calls us and asks us to represent them, it takes an average of 2 to 2.5 hours to complete all the information that we need to submit to Social Security. We want to make sure that information on the application is as complete as possible and in its entirety before we submit it to Social Security. If it's sent in piecemeal to Social Security, that has a tendency, number one, to take longer for a claim to process. Number two, it's most apt to be put on a diary date, or they call it a tickler at Social Security, and be looked at in another date. We want Social Security to look at this claim now, give it attention now, and assign it to a disability examiner as soon as possible. So in the initial claim, they'll ask you basic information, your birth, any marriages, where you've lived, do you have any dependents. You'll be asked to provide lots of information about your personal history, your medical history, and especially your work history going back about 15 years. Then you'll need to sign a release that allows Social Security to get your medical records, and it will allow them to look at it to see if they show why your disability qualifies you for benefits. All the applications have to be signed by you, and then we send everything to Social Security. Once Social Security has the information, they take it all down, they make sure everything's complete, and they send it to something called DDS. DDS is the Disability Determination Service. There's at least one in every state, and they look at the claim. So it's not a judge looking at it at this point. These are just lay people who are called disability examiners who look at your claim to see if it meets the requirements for Social Security. At DDS, if you're unable to get your medical records on your own, DDS will call your doctors, fax your doctors, and ask for that information. This is why it's very important to list every single treating physician that you have had or treated for your condition. I know some people may think, well, you know, this one's not important because I only saw them once. It doesn't matter. We need each and every treating physician, hospital, anywhere you've had rehab, and we need to submit those to Social Security to make sure they have complete information. If Social Security doesn't get the records back from your treating physician or other sources, and they don't have enough information to make a decision on your claim, they may send you to something called a consultative exam. And these aren't meant to be scary, but these are actual exams given by doctors who don't necessarily specialize in your condition, but are just told by a form by Social Security, please test the claimant for X, Y, and Z. This is where it gets troublesome, because if these examiners who do the exam for you and are not familiar with traumatic brain injuries, for instance, it could be a doctor who was in general practice for 40 years and now he's doing exams for a cost or a fee for Social Security. If they're not that familiar with a TBI, they're not going to know exactly what to look for or exactly how to document that case. Again, they are not there to support you and be on your side. They are just there to get the information to Social Security in the format that they want.
Right. They're actually working for Social Security. Or,
absolutely.
You know, they're working for Social Security. They're not working for you. So keep that in mind when you go to those exams, because they are intimidating. You know, you aren't going to your own doctor. You know, on one hand, you've already got the information, your medical records, and your experience with your own doctor, and now you're being told to go to stranger doctors. So, you know, do remember that when you go, that, you know, that's really not a second opinion for you or a doctor who's working for you. That's a doctor who's working for Social Security. So,
and depending on your condition, your claim could be pending at Social Security at the initial claim process, which is the first level, the application process. It could take anywhere from as little as 30 days if you have certain conditions. They're called compassionate allowance listings if you meet one of the conditions in that listing of impairments. Or it could take 90 to up to 120 days to make a decision on your case. Waiting is a very, very regular routine form a process at Social Security. If you don't hear from them in 2 weeks, that doesn't mean your claim got lost. It means it's stuck in the backlog. There are about 700,000 claims stuck in the backlog right now at Social Security Disability. Unless you are represented by someone who understands Social Security, the process, and speaks the language, and you represent yourself, it may be difficult to get your case heard the proper way that it needs to be heard. We know what they're looking for in the forms. We understand that some questions may be trick questions or need to be answered in a certain way, so we know how to verbalize it, and we know how to communicate with Social Security. A layperson who is applying for themselves may not understand what Social Security is asking or why they're asking it, or doesn't understand how much detail or how little detail to provide in that, and that's why it's important to have a representative starting right from the beginning. Because unless a representative or an attorney has all the information up front, they can help create that case and make sure it's in the proper format for Social Security. You don't need to call Social Security every 5 minutes to see what the status of your case is. In fact, you would probably be sitting in a queue forever in order to get any information. If you have a representative, they do this all the time. That's what they do all day, every day, and they will call, get the status, and make sure they have everything they need. But if you find that you've applied and you're still waiting, that's probably the norm right now.
Wow. You know, I also don't want to interrupt you, but I
sure.
have an acquaintance who is a judge, a former judge, actually retired, and he told me that in cases like that, he used to find it very annoying, as did his other judges, when people came in. The court system is so clogged and so busy that, you know, their dockets are so full, they just want to move these cases through. And when you get people who are inexperienced, lay people like ourselves going through, they really don't have the patience or the tolerance, you know, to watch our bumbling through. They actually prefer it. And he told me that a higher percentage of the cases get a favorable decision when somebody is represented, because they don't start off on the wrong foot with the judge. They have somebody who, as you say, works in the system every day, knows how to streamline the process and just shoot clean through the works instead of, you know, fumbling through the paperwork, not understanding the process, and annoying the judge. And that's one thing you don't want to do if you have a hearing is annoy the judge. So, you know, not only can having a representative, you know, an attorney take a load off your shoulders at trying to figure out the bureaucratic jungle, but it's also just, I think, going to make, you know, a more favorable decision if you're represented by somebody who knows what they're doing.
And typically there's at least a 25% difference between unrepresented claimants and represented claimants in the award rates. So the represented claimants typically have a 25% to almost 50% better chance of being awarded because of the representation. Again,
wow.
This is a practice with Social Security that has evolved and changed so much over the years. As I've been doing this about 14, almost 15 years, I can't tell you how many changes I've seen from being at a paper-only process and seeing files that were a good 6 inches thick to now most everything at Social Security is electronic. And they prefer that applications are filed electronically. If you have a traumatic brain injury or something related, have cognitive deficits, it's pretty difficult to navigate that electronic application. Sometimes it'll cut you off, or if your internet connection is bad, it'll cut you off. You have to start all over again. It has to be done precisely, and it has to be worded very well in order for Social Security to see what kind of claim you've got. Otherwise, it gets stuck in a queue, and then you'll have to keep following up, and then a claims representative at Social Security will have to follow up with you. That's why it's best to have representation. We know what goes in the file. We know what they're looking for. We know what to expect, and that's how it helps expedite your case. So it's at
right.
Let's say we were at the initial claim level. Let's say you're denied at the initial claim level. And Social Security denies about 70%+ of cases at this level.
I was going to say, let's just hover there for a moment. That's another thing I read a lot about on the pages. So if everyone caught that, because that is very upsetting and frustrating, but very true. 70% of the cases, it reminds me of a John Grisham novel where you know, look at the insurance companies who just toss the first set of claim paperwork, you know, that comes in, and that's kind of what it feels like with the Social Security system. So if you're in that 70% who get denied the first time round, don't be overly frustrated at that point, because with an odd like 70%, sounds like most people are filing an appeal.
Right. And we win about 50% of our cases at the initial claim level. Overall, we win about 85% of our cases without a claimant having to have to leave their house and go to a hearing. So most of our cases are won without anyone having to go to a hearing before a judge, which is very intimidating, and I'll get to that in a minute. But let's say your initial claim is denied. You have 60 days in order to appeal that decision. If you do not appeal it within 60 days, you will have to start all over again in the process. And considering it takes us about 2 to 2.5 hours to take an initial claim, we wouldn't want you to go through anything like that either. But if you file on your own and want to appeal on your own, you have 60 days to appeal the decision. You can do that online as well, or you can appeal through a form through Social Security. This is basically an exact replica of the process at the initial claim level, because it just goes back to DDS and another disability examiner looks at the case to see if the previous disability examiner made the right decision. Well, since they work together, normally the considerations are denied, because they never want to say that a coworker disagrees with the decision. So
good,
I would
point.
Say 91% of the cases are denied at the reconsideration level. Have I seen reconsideration awards? Absolutely. We get them all the time. because normally it's because we help a person out once their initial claim has been denied, and then they hire us. We see what's missing in the case, and we help get a reconsideration awarded. But you can expect about 91% of the time a reconsideration will be denied, and you'll have to appeal to the hearing level, which is the most daunting level of all. So you have 60 days to appeal the reconsideration decision, and it's a request for hearing, and it's made through Social Security. This is a very technical and very detailed process. It's not paper anymore. It's something where you're communicating with ODAR, which is the Office of Disability Adjudication Review Board, and they have administrative law judges. They're just regular judges who make the decision on your case. We would then send all the medical evidence we could provide. If you're unrepresentative, you'll have to do that on your own. But any medical evidence we provide, we also write a brief with it and submit it to the judge. We ask the judge for something called an on-the-record decision, which means it's a quicker decision and it's obtained without the necessity of going to an actual hearing. And this is where most of our cases are won 85% of the time. So let's say you're unrepresented and you are scheduled for a hearing. Sometimes it takes around a year and a half, up to 2 years to wait to get a hearing scheduled. So do not be alarmed by that, but do expect a very long process. Because the backlogs at the hearing level are outrageous, it will take a while to get a hearing scheduled. But we do check in often with ODAR and make sure our claimants are scheduled as soon as possible. If you're unrepresented and you go to a hearing and the judge sees you unrepresented, he will ask you if you would like the benefit of searching for a representative and postponing or continuing the hearing. Many claimants say, no, I can do this on my own, and they fail and they lose because this is where the legal process comes in. A medical expert or a vocational expert would be on hand either by phone or in person to give the judge recommendations on the case. Normally, the medical expert and the vocational expert are on the side of Social Security, so they're not really there to benefit you and look at your medical records and say, well, you know, he can do this job, and actually, you know, he can't move his arms or his hands the way it should to do a job. They're not there to be on your side. They're there to tell the judge, we see X number of jobs that this person can do, even though they are disabled. And the jobs that they suggest are very strange. You could be an egg checker to see if an egg is cracked. But they will find jobs. And it's, you can't tell the judge, well, I not only can I not do that job, but there are no jobs in my area for that kind of position. It doesn't matter. For Social Security, it's doing any work as it's known in the national economy. So if there's a job as an egg checker in Florida, they'll say that you can do that. It's a very, very technical process. The judge will ask you questions. The judge will ask your attorney questions if you are represented. And a hearing can take anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour and a half. And your attorney will prepare you well what to expect in the hearing. And your attorney, if you're represented, will know your file inside and out. It's called an exhibit file, and it's marked in certain sections alphabetically by your work, by your medical information, by your education, so that your attorney is trained to know everything about you in order to best present your case to the judge. If you're unrepresented, you don't know anything that to expect because you don't know what the judge is going to ask. We're pretty prepared ahead of time in order to best represent you for the case. If it gets denied at the hearing level, which rarely we have a case that's denied at the hearing level. If you're on your own, you can appeal to the appeals council. You don't have to go anywhere to do that. That, again, is a paper process where you have to provide a legal brief, and a group of judges in Falls Church, Virginia, looks at your case. Most cases are denied if you go to that level. The last level is federal district court. We do take cases that far if they warrant it. And Social Security actually expects people to drop out somewhere midway in between this process in order to protect the trust funds. So it's
I was going to say, you know, one of the things they have in their favor there is that I would imagine a lot of people get frustrated along the way, and they simply wear people out before they come to a place where they can get a decision rightfully in their favor. So, you know, that time that it takes to go through this whole process is very frustrating. And when people can't work, you know, a lot of people are homeless or, you know, really having to dance as fast as they can for all the time that it takes. And I guess that's another reason why I would recommend a licensed attorney when you go through the process, because, you know, you can call your attorney and pester them some, but, you know, the government is a big machine that moves very slow, and it's good to have someone who works in that arena all the time, because otherwise I think a lot of us would get tired, you know, just too tired, worn out, frustrated, and just think after a couple no's, you know, give up and quit, you know, that kind of rejection. It's a really tough fight to do by yourself, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And that's why we represent people who cannot speak for themselves, have trouble speaking for themselves, get confused and overwhelmed by the process. You know, I've been doing this 14 years, and I actually learn something new every day from one of our claimants. And their strength is just unimaginable. These people that want to fight and continue to fight, we love that, and we'll protect their rights, and we'll make sure we give them the best possible representation on their case as we can. And also, if we go entirely through the process, up all the way through even to federal district court, if we don't win, we don't charge a fee. Our fee is paid by Social Security. You don't have to pay us directly at all. Social Security takes our fee from the back pay. So you actually don't have to make out a check to us. But if we go all the way through the appeals process with you, there is no fee. Even if it takes years, there's no fee.
Wow. Well, so I would think that the attorney, if the attorney takes your case, they, you know, would have done a lot of pre-qualifying and have a pretty good feeling that this case is going to make it. Not, you know, nothing is ever guaranteed. Things come up and situations change. But I would think initially that, you know, your firm, any attorney, you know, if they look at the case file and don't think it has a pretty good chance of winning, probably aren't going to take on the case.
Right. We don't represent people who claim to have, let's just say, a broken toe and they're 22 years old. We take very valid cases. We take them because we know they're going to win and we can make them win. We'll take the toughest cases, obviously, but we don't take people who want to, say, milk the system and have disabilities that aren't actually disabilities. If you have a disability that you know you're well-deserving of benefits because you paid into the system, we'll absolutely represent you.
Right, and that's one of the problems that a lot of our listeners have. You know, many of our listeners do have visible disabilities as a result of their traumatic brain injury, but there's an awfully large percentage of aneurysm people and TBI people who look normal. And, you know, that's a double bind to be in that position, because when you look normal, people treat you normal, they expect you to be normal, you want to be normal again. And, you know, when the computer in the brain isn't working the way that it used to work, you know, you're not only subject to, you know, doubt and feelings of shame and lots of other negative things from the public, but then also, you know, have to face that in court, you know, or through legal representation. So I think it's important to have an attorney who understands about traumatic brain injuries. I think I would probably ask my attorney if they had handled more than one traumatic brain injury case before, because there are some nuances that I would think would be a little more difficult to work with. You were talking earlier about the doctors that Social Security sends you to, and that sometimes they're not at all familiar with your condition, and that's kind of an unfair disadvantage. I guess I would also just toss it out there to our listeners that when you go to find legal representation, that you ask them if they've tried TBI cases, you know, how many TBI cases have they tried, and are they familiar, you know, with those, some of those subtle nuances that, you know, get us hung up in a lot of other places. That's important when we're fighting for our future financial security.
And we understand that. We've handled hundreds of TBI cases, and we understand what could happen, the after effects. You may look normal to the outside person, the outside world, but we know what's going on in there. We understand there are cognitive issues and many other issues involved. That's what we do. We prove your case for you. Your job only has to be to take care of yourselves, get yourself to doctor's appointments, take care of your family. Let us worry about handling the government. You know, our staff completes all forms, from the application to the most detailed supplemental questionnaires, and our role is to make sure we provide the best possible case for you, not you. That's our job. Your job is just take care of your health, and we insulate the claimant from the frustrations of dealing with the process. We educate you on what's going on. We keep in touch with you every step of the way. When you best understand the process, what we're doing for you, that's where you're best able to assist us in communicating your condition to Social Security.
And you mentioned something else, and I don't know if this is typical of most firms, but you told me that this was something that your firm does. And, you know, one of the concerns is, you know, say you are awarded Social Security disability and you've gotten paid, you know, out of that back pay, and then Social Security challenges you later. You told me that you still stand behind the cases that you work with initially?
Right. If we represented you through to an award for Social Security disability and Social Security sends you a notice or calls you, say, 2, 5, or 7 years later saying we're reevaluating your case, you've come up for a continuing disability review. It's called a CDR. And that's based on when the judge or the disability examiner made a decision on your case. They will look at it to see if it meets, and these are old-fashioned Social Security terms, but they're called MIs, MIPS, and MINES. MI is medical improvement expected, medical improvement possible, and medical improvement not expected. MIs are two-year diary dates. So 2 years from the point of being entitled to Social Security benefits, Social Security may look at your case and say, hey, we need updated medical records or information if you have been working, anything about what you've been doing for the last 2 years. If we handled the case for you in the past, all you have to do is call us up and say, I got a CDR, continuing disability review, in the mail, and we'll handle your case. Now, normally a claimant is unrepresented. If they get one of those, they're responsible for completing it. There's a 10-day deadline and a 60-day deadline. They're very different from actually applying for and appealing for Social Security, and that's why when that happens, it's very much advised that you get an attorney when that happens.
Yes, I would think so. Okay, so that's the CDR. Do you want me to take a couple of callers, or do you want to continue?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, let's go ahead and take a couple of calls.
Okay, let's see. How about, and some people are just listening, and if you're listening and I open the mic, just tell me you're a listener and I'll move on. How about area code 941? Who do we have?
Oh, Miss Kim. You did have to light that candle, didn't you?
I did. Oh, DJ. Okay. It's DJ. Okay, now we've got like 15 minutes left, so we can't get into anybody's specific cases too much, but do you have a general question you want to ask?
Yes. I want to ask her, what does she think about maybe getting a law passed for people like me that got a workers' compensation injury, spent 16 days in a coma, 22 days in ICU, 30 days in a health cell, and then 3 years and 8 months in assisted living. Why not a law locally or federally that says that these brain injury rehabs, assisted living, insurance companies, nurse case managers need to send a report to Social Security at the year mark of your disabling injury that's stating workability? Would that not slow down the paperwork process?
Actually, it would. First of all, we don't do insurance litigation, so we would be left out of that. But what you're saying is about after a year since you've been entitled, having a nurse case manager or someone on your behalf send medical information to Social Security, that actually does bog down the Social Security system. My advice to people, if you have not heard from Social Security, don't bother giving them information. Number one, it'll get lost. Number two, it'll be put in the wrong file. They've got enough paper and information right now to last them for years upon years due to the backlogs. And CDRs, these continuing disability reviews, are happening more and more infrequently because Social Security is primarily involved in resolving the backlog for people who are currently applying for and appealing Social Security. So like I told Kim before about her case, she was due up for a two-year disability review mark, and they've not contacted her at all. So my advice is don't contact them. Let them contact you. Once they do, yes, you can have a nurse case manager or someone on your behalf send information directly to Social Security. Would they pass a law? I wish they would. Getting through Senate and Congress right now would be a pretty big uphill battle.
Nothing's getting through Senate and Congress right now. But, no, my question was, after a year of being in assisted living facilities, I spent 16 days in a coma, a Glasgow 5 coma with a severe brain bleed. And six and a half years later, I go to my Social Security hearing, and the judge said, well, first of all, I had character issues, which is never an issue with Social Security. And she said, I never met a listed impairment. I meet three. I meet mental limitations, 223 point whatever. I meet TBI, obviously. And I also meet serious neuroendocrine system impairment. My thyroid is at 13-something, which is way over the legal limit of 3.0. So I meet three listed impairments. And with all the records that I had, 588 pages, like you said, they go through clearing houses, and other attorneys start looking at this stuff. And it's easy with 588 pages to break down and say, well, he ran a 5K race 6 months after he woke up from a coma. That's great, but that does not work out to somebody that can work 8 hours a week, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Right.
Somebody said, I ride my bike all over town in an IME, individual medical examination. Mm-hmm. These things, they're not important. What's important is that you prove that the human being can get up in the morning, wash his butt, go to work, and be a ticket taker, a Walmart greeter, something. Nothing was proved. Nothing at all was proved that I could do because I fall asleep so often. Go ahead.
Well, it all depends on how your case is proved through any attorney or representative that you had. You may think you meet a listing for Social Security, but there are very, very detailed steps in order to meet that listing. The listing is not just one phrase. It's actually pages upon pages long, including A, B, C, D, E, F, G points, and you have to have certain pieces within your medical record to meet that listing. Now, and a good attorney would also say they equal a listing based on specific information. If you've not had the specific testing for it, they can say you equal listing, which also works at the hearing level. But it depends upon very good representation to direct the judge into making a proper decision to you. The attorney needs to control the hearing and the medical evidence to make sure the judge sees that point. You just don't throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. That does not work with Social Security, and they don't like that. You have to be specific and pointed.
Great. Thanks so much, and thanks for your question, DJ. We're going to go on to area code 908. Who do we have?
Just don't throw everything
Area code 908, are you with us? Yep, maybe not. Let's try area code 402. Area code 402, are you with us? Okay, maybe just another listener. We do have a question in the chat. Let's see. Now, Social Security is a... Whoa, somebody typed big. Stephen typed big. The prior question, though, Social Security is a federal case and not a state case. It seemed like there was some question, and I have to scroll back up here, but a question between state determination and federal determination. I'm not sure. She's saying that guidelines are different in every state, but is that maybe... talking about
that,
something else, workman's comp, or what?
That could be state disability, that it differs from every state. With Social Security disability, it is a federally mandated program. The rules are same in every state. However, what they're talking about is that there's a disability determination service that's in every state, and they're the ones that apply Social Security's rules and make the decision. There may be a higher award rate in Missouri versus in New Jersey, where the disability examiners are more stringent. It's a human process still. They have to process the rules and see if someone meets or equals a listing and meets Social Security's rules. But it's their humans, they're people that make the decisions, and that's why it could be different. But the rules are all the same everywhere in every state. They're governed by Social Security.
Okay, great. Well, that I was a little confused on that myself when Dina brought it up. Hopefully that answered your question, Dina. Let's see. Let me try 908. Area code 908, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Who are we talking to?
Okay, this is Darcy Gilson from New Jersey. And I suffered my TBI almost 2 years ago. And I was working for a company full-time when it happened. And I don't know what they did or how they did it, but they filed the whole thing for me. And now they got me Social Security, but they're also required to pay me the difference of whatever it was that I was entitled to. And now they're making me go to like some independent examiner in New York City. It's some 8-hour testing to undergo. The insurance company is. And my question is, how do their criteria differ from the state?
Private disability insurance, state disability insurance, and Social Security disability insurance all differ greatly from each other. Private long-term disability insurance will put you through that long 8-hour exam to see if you are still entitled to receive private disability benefits through them. The state of New Jersey, I know, has disability benefits that they pay out, and again, it's a different system. Do they all speak to each other? No, they don't. Unless you, for instance, we're Social Security attorneys, unless we get the information from them, we can't use that in the case, but we'd have to know that they use that testing. But the criteria specifically for private LTD and or state disability, I don't know the criteria. They're all so very different. Social Security seems to be the most strict, and the others seem to be more reliant upon paying for exams. I wish you the best of luck with it, and I know that the New Jersey state disability can be jumping through hoops, and I just wish you the best of luck in that.
Okay, thank you, and thank you for calling in, Darcy. It is run a little different. I know the industry that I was in before my injury was the insurance business, and so I knew a little bit about disability insurance, not the state disability program, but normally if you buy a good individual disability policy, it's going to pay regardless of whether Social Security decides to approve you or not. It's not contingent on Social Security benefits. That by far is the better policy to have. Obviously, we all have pre-existing conditions now and can't buy policies, but for anybody who does not have a pre-existing condition, a personal a disability policy, I believe, is preferable. Now, better than having no disability, the group disability benefits are good, but many of those have a provision in them, and you alluded to that year mark earlier, Melissa, that if you do qualify to have your group disability insurance pay you, then many of those policies have you obliged to applying for Social Security at the one-year point, because they understand if you are able to get a favorable decision that they get their money back, hence a portion of your back pay that goes to pay back the insurance company for the benefits that they pay you in the first year. So that's something for your friends and family to take a look at when they buy a disability policy, and that's, does it have a contingent benefit, disability benefit on it? But I think we answered just about everybody's calls that are online. Looks like we have in the chat. We've got about 4 more minutes. Is there anything you'd like to say to close this out? And then I will give your contact information again.
Sure. I do want to let everyone know that although it seems like an insane program that's so insanely difficult to go through and navigate, that's why there are representatives that are allowed to help people go through that entire process. As the years go by, the rules change. In fact, they change monthly. And we're up to date on Social Security disability rules. We also practice veterans disability. I didn't touch on that much, but we help veterans with service-connected disabilities appeal their denied claims, and we also help them increase their percentage rate. If they receive 10%, we can help them out by seeing if they can be awarded for a higher percentage rate within veterans disability. But with the Social Security disability benefit, my best advice is don't give up. And my other piece of advice is, please, please seek assistance. If it's not through our company, please seek a qualified, experienced Social Security disability attorney. We practice nationwide. We can be there for you in every single state. But if you prefer someone local, please see someone that has at least 10 years' experience doing this kind of work and is up to date on Social Security's rules. It's a very difficult program to navigate. Please work with someone who is experienced and knows the system and speaks the language.
Yes, that's excellent advice. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us tonight. Melissa Thomas is our guest with Bassett Law Firm. In the program notes on the Blog Talk Radio page, you'll have her contact information. I typed it into the chat earlier. In just a moment, I'll type it into the chat again for those of you listening online. This was Melissa Thomas with Bassett Law Firm. Their website is www.bassettlawyers.com. That's two S's and two T's. I will spell it in the chat. Her email is mthomas, T-H-O-M-A-S, at bassettlawyers.com. We've got just a few seconds. So, Melissa, thank you so much for coming on and answering some of our questions. I'm sure you'll be getting some calls and I'll be getting some feedback, and hopefully we can have you on again as a guest in the future, and maybe go through some more of the nitty gritty. The bureaucratic jungle is just such a huge machine to try to sift through on your own, people. I do recommend that you do get a licensed attorney to help you through the process in order to have the best possible result. You know, where I used to say when I was selling insurance that disability benefits, when it came to insurance, was one of the more important benefits. We don't think anything of insuring our car or our house, but few of us think about the most selfish benefit of all, which is to insure our ability for future financial security. So, you know, when you're talking about stakes that big, I don't recommend that you try to do it on your own. But I'm going to close the show in the usual way, something I believe that we all have, and that's a guardian angel with Leah West. And before I put us out, if you like this show, there's a button in the top left corner of your program page that says follow. If you click on that button, you'll be sent an email prior to each of the shows being aired. I want to thank you all for listening tonight. We appreciate your support. So glad you're here, and hopefully we'll see you next week. Again, this is a guardian angel. Blessings to everybody. Thanks.